episode of Podcasting in Paradise, the track by track, album by album, listen along podcast of all things Jommy Buffett. My name's Cameron. I'm your host and a longtime Buffett boy with a taste for the blues. And I am joined by my friend and my co-host, who probably prefers bluesberry jam. It's Joe.
Cameron, we're going to have some fun on this Saturday night show. Well, it's Saturday for you. Saturday night show for you, Sunday morning show for me.
Wait, so Cameron, Joe, are you doing like a throw in your voice thing? What is that? Is that a man behind you? What's going on here?
Cameron, I was just going to say, we don't have time this week for our normal bullshit because we have a special guest with us today. I got actually kind of a good news, bad news situation. I'll start with the bad news. The bad news to our audience is that on today's show, we are not going to be discussing the seminal 1983 Jimmy Buffett masterpiece, Somewhere Over China.
Instead, Joe, we've been looking forward to that one. So thematic for you.
I know. And instead, we are going to be taking a break from our normal format so that we can have a little chat with a special guest. And our guest today, well, he's the son of a tailor. We talked about him before on this show in our Volcano episode. He has played with the Fabulous Thunderbirds, Junior Watson, Kid Ramos, and Nathan James. And he is a member of the extended Coral Reefer family. He is the son of Greg Fingers Taylor and the stepson of the Fabulous Thunderbirds' own Kim Watson. Ladies and gentlemen, you've heard of Blues Traveler. Well, our guest today is a blues rampager. You've heard of Tim the Toolman Taylor. Well, our guest today is Stephen the Bluesman Taylor. Please welcome Stephen Taylor.
Thank you for that intro. I was not expecting that at all.
I spent a long time writing that, Stephen.
No, just for you. I have to correct you on one thing.
Yes.
It's Kim Wilson instead
of
Watson.
Did I not say Kim Wilson? But, I said Kim Watson. Don't.
Yes.
That's Joe, you're getting us canceled.
Damn it. Okay. Kim Wilson.
Okay, Pops will he'll forgive you.
Well, I also wrote the Fabulous Thunderbirds in my notes here, so that's not the only mistake that I made.
Maybe you could pitch that to
Thunderbirds.
Yeah, Fabulous. I don't know if they're looking for.
Yeah, I'll pitch it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you are family, right? So you can. It's like a what do you call it? A portmanteau.
There you go.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Jesus.
All right, so Stephen, before we get started, I want to—I don't know if you listened to our Volcano episode, but we talked about your album on that show. Specifically, your album was my companion for my 30-minute cardio workouts at the gym.
Really?
It used to be Son of a Tailor. That was my go-to 30-minute cardio workout album, and it was replaced by the album Existential Blues. So thank you for that.
Wow, well, thank you for that. Yeah, I hope I helped your workouts.
Oh, absolutely. In some way. Yes. Nothing gets me into peak cardio like some nice blues rampage.
There you go. You found a good use for my music. I'll take it. Yes. You know? Yeah.
Oh, was that not your intent when you recorded it to make the perfect workout album?
No. Yeah, it's a workout album. The secret's out. Thanks, guys. I think we've done all we need to do here. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I'm actually surprised to hear that
it's a good workout album.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, before that, it was Son of a Sailor. I was listening to that and skipping over Coast to Marseille. And you mentioned to me earlier that Son of a Sailor is your favorite Jimmy Buffett album. Is it because it's the bluesiest of the albums?
I feel as though it has the most blues rock funk to it. And that's what I like. That's what Greg liked too. And also Coast to Marseille is a beautiful song in its own right. It's not a workout song at all.
No, it's more of a cool down or stretching song.
Yeah. It's a tearjerker too, if you really get into it. But yeah, so I'd say that's why it is my favorite.
It's a great Fingers album too. We, we talk about Fingers on the show almost as much as we talk about Jimmy Buffett, because there's always awesome, these moments. Yeah. We love Greg Fingers Taylor. He's by far our favorite member of the Coral Reefers. I wanted to ask you, do you ever drop his name at a Margaritaville in order to get like preferential seating?
I don't visit Margaritavilles that often, but if I do, I definitely would drop that name.
You play the whole "Do you know who I am?" card at Margaritaville.
Yeah,
we're gonna need you to repeat that one, but say that you go to Margaritaville all the time. I'm trying to get a sponsorship, so just go ahead and take that one from the top.
Yeah, actually, I go every Friday, and I drop that name a couple times.
By the way, I don't know if you've listened to our show very much. We do typically waste a lot of time, and we are going to honor yours. We typically waste a lot of time bullshitting for the first 45
minutes.
That's
wrong with that.
So I'm very much trying to not step all over this interview by adding inane bullshit.
Anything.
Yeah. Yeah. Or anything, really. Well, you know, it's just, it's where we are. The biggest star we've had is my father on this show as a guest, who is also a musician. I don't know if you want to like meet him or like record with him or like, I don't know, give him an art or something. But we're just a little bit, we're feeling fortunate. We're feeling blessed.
We're a little bit starstruck.
A little starstruck.
Oh, no way.
Shy.
No way. No way. No way.
But
who's your dad, by the way? Can I?
Is my dad's name Patrick Collins. If we want to talk about
himself,
my dad
P-Pat
for a while,
Collins.
Yeah, P-Pat Collins, Papa Parrothead.
Yeah.
If we want to talk a little bit about my father, I have a fun tie-in for you.
Yeah.
During the research for this interview, which has irrevocably altered my internet search algorithms, I went to your website and noticed that you had canceled a lot of shows, but you did have a show booked for June something, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And that show was in Sacramento. And that show was at a little place called the Torch Club. Well, it just so happens that I am in Sacramento currently. We're from Sacramento. And my father's last big show that he played was a benefit at the Torch Club.
No way.
So it's almost as if, yes, isn't that neat?
That's so crazy. Yeah, that's pretty cool, actually.
Is that kind of cool?
Yeah, we never got to do that gig either. I got to update my thing to say that never happened either.
Oh, was that from last year? Oh shit!
It's from last year, so I gotta get on there. That's a good reminder. I haven't even touched that part of my website because there are no gigs.
It's a nice little monument to what we thought life was going to be in 2020.
Right, I still left it there because I still hope.
So, Stephen, one of the things that we talk about a lot on this show is what we call formative culture, which is the music that we listened to when we first started listening to music, which is a big theme of our show, because Jimmy Buffett was a huge deal to Cameron when he was a little boy. It was the first thing that he got into. I am just now getting into Jimmy Buffett. I missed the boat on that. That's kind of the premise of our show, is that I'm listening to all this stuff for the first time. Cameron is my guide through Margaritaville. So we're wondering, how did you first get into the blues? I know that Kim Wilson's your father, and he introduced you to that. But what was like sort of the first blues stuff that he got you into, or what got you into that genre of music?
So, well, both Greg and Kim are devout blues musicians. I mean, they both listened to Little Walter a lot when they were little, and actually learned by ear. Both Greg and Kim learned by ear by listening to the radio and listening to Little Walter and Muddy Waters and guys like that, James Cotton. And when I was in the crib, they were playing Little Walter and all the old stuff from a young age. I had already been listening to it. And, you know, as I got older, I started to listen to more rock, right? Like we all go through the rock phase, you know? So I was listening to Hendrix and Clapton and guys like that. And then, you know, I got to be around 16, 17, and then I got back into the blues. I started listening, like digging into Otis Rush and Magic Sam a lot, you know, Buddy Guy, B.B. King. And those guys were, I was like, man, this is how it should sound. Like, this is what I like to listen to, you know. But yeah, as far as growing up, I always kind of listened to whatever my pops was listening to. And then there was a phase where I kind of rebelled against it a little, you know, for a few years there, and was like, well, I'm going to listen to rock, you know? And then I was like, oh, this kind of sucks, actually. But I mean, I'm not talking about like Jimi Hendrix and stuff. Obviously, I think he's great. I mean, he's amazing, but I'm talking about other stuff I won't even mention I listened to. So,
as it turns out, I have a question here, which we're transitioning into perfectly. So part of our discussion of formative culture is we talk about some of the bands that we were listening to before we got into good music that we're mortified to talk about now. So with Cameron, before he got into Jimmy Buffett.
Wait, hold on a second. Yeah. You just fully set us up for embarrassment and then went, by the way, Cameron's really the embarrassing one. Let's talk about his
early
affinity for Christian rock.
I got my
rock.
Own. I got my own here. I'm gonna start off with Cameron and get progressively more mortifying from there. Before he was into Jimmy Buffett, he was into a Christian rock group called the Western State Service Band.
And they were a pretty big deal. They had CDs, so you know it was
hey, man.
And actually, his dad got him into Jimmy Buffett just so that he would stop playing the Western State Service Band.
I like your dad more. I hear about him, man.
Yeah,
it's a pretty cool guy.
and the first Buffett album that Cameron heard was the 1999 classic Beach House on the Moon, one of his best albums.
Oh, there you
go. Staple.
So that was Cameron's formative culture. For me, there was a period from like fourth to sixth grade where I was super into Green Day. Like that was my introduction to music. So are there any bands like from your, from that rebellious phase of your life between the cradle where you were being steeped in the blues to now that you're mortified to talk about? And would you talk about it with us on this
mortified
podcast?
To talk about? I mean, I'm not too mortified of anything I've listened. I used to listen to Selena Gomez.
Nice.
there you go.
Yeah.
I mean, that's she still has some bangers. All right.
Yeah.
You know, take it easy on me. But band wise, I mean, everybody was listening to like Fall Out Boy. I mean, stuff like that. That genre, right? Mm-hmm. That sort of
angsty
guy rock stuff. Yeah, and it's just like, I cringe at that. I'm like, why was I listening to that? No. And I mean, if you like Fall Out Boy and you're listening to this, I'm not trying to like get on your case.
we have a huge Fall Out Boy, Jimmy Buffett overlap on this podcast, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you do. There might be one of my buddies that hears it and goes, hey, come on, Steve.
You mentioned earlier that early on you were being introduced to the blues. I also heard a story on Dan Smith's podcast, which you guested on a little while ago, where you said that you were gifted, like, was it an engraved cup from Jimmy Buffett birth?
Yes, I was. It's made of solid gold.
My goodness.
And it has birthday on my full name on it. And I don't know why, but he did. Probably just because he could.
Well, because you're a member of the extended Coral Reefer family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I should have brought it to show you guys on here to like, here it is,
Well, I mean, otherwise, how can we possibly verify?
Yeah.
I'll send a picture. All right. Take it easy.
But that leads me to, it's an interesting thing to think about, where all of us were introduced to Jimmy Buffett at a certain point. Cameron heard it. I heard his music for the first time at age 10. I heard his music for the first time at age 30, however old I was last December.
Hard math, Joe.
Yeah. So, but did you know Jimmy Buffett first as a guy who knew your dad, or as a musician?
Oh, so like when I was little, how did I?
Yeah, like, well, did you meet him like before you knew about his music, or did you hear his music first?
Oh, I definitely met him first.
Yeah,
and I would be backstage at shows all the time and stuff like that. And I remember I was always maybe when I was like 8 to 10 years old, I started to think like, man, he's kind of short. I'm like a little kid, but I don't know, I just had to add that in there. But I love Jimmy Buffett. I love his music. He welcomes me every time he's in town. He's like, yeah, come on out, and then get backstage, all that stuff. But Yeah, I knew him as a guy first, right? I was like, oh, this is the guy. This is the boss.
Just you know what I mean? Short dude who's friends with my dad.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, you know, I knew all the Terraheads and we'd watched the show and like, you know, I knew what it was pretty early on. I figured out what was going on, you know. This is also a funny story. I was at a Jerry Buffett concert. I think this was 2013, maybe something like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you guys watch hockey at all. Mike Babcock.
I've seen the movie Slapshot, if that
hey,
counts.
There you go. Well, Mike Babcock was the head coach of the Detroit Red Wings, and mm-hmm. this show was in Detroit. And I never forget looking back. I was standing on the lawn. It was at DTE Energy, mm-hmm. whatever, Pine Knob, the concert was. And I look back, and I'm like, that's Mike Babcock. And I never forget. I'm a pretty big hockey fan, so I was like, oh, I know who that guy is. And I looked at him and I'll never forget. He looked at me like, you know, like, why do you know who I am? You know? And so I go up to him and he's like, all right, come here, skinny. Let's get a picture. I got a picture with him at the Jimmy Buffett concert. But
see, that's the
stuff
point,
like that, you know,
that's the point where you pull the, do you know who I am card?
Yeah. And then I didn't do that in that instance. I should have.
You should have. Yeah.
You know,
ever heard of someone named Greg Fingers Taylor?
I bet he has.
Well, I am Stephen Little Fingers Taylor.
You can call me Pinky.
For short. Yeah, exactly.
Do you have a cool nickname? Is that a thing?
No, not really. I mean, I've been called Stevie, you know, Stevie Tay.
Little
before,
Stevie Taylor.
That kind of stuff.
Little Stevie but, Tay. Like,
if that catches on, you know,
we can call him the little big rig.
Little big. Oh, ooh. Yeah. There you go. I like that. I like the callbacks to the,
that's
songs,
good,
man.
We speak almost exclusively in Jimmy Buffett lyrics at this point.
It's getting hard to have a normal conversation. Truly.
It is. Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that, man.
I mean,
I didn't know
some...
that was now. I know it's Saturday and it's Saturday night. I thought you were mentioning my song too.
I was, yeah, Saturday
you were?
Night
okay,
show.
Okay, yeah, that's my song. Yeah, I was like, oh, okay.
Yeah, I usually
do you do the push-ups to that one or what?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Saturday night show. I can't actually do a push-up though.
Oh, come on. Is that
yeah,
true?
You can, man.
I haven't attempted a push-up like okay. since the presidential physical fitness awards in
oh.
middle school.
Okay.
After that, I was like, I'm done with this.
You're like, I got this. Too easy.
That can't be true, Joe.
No, I haven't tried to put. I do the machines, like the machines that yeah. simulate push-ups.
If you can do that, you can do a real one. I'm sure.
Yeah.
We were talking about Stephen's relationship with Jimmy Buffett's music. Well, actually, I'm going to ask this question. Mm-hmm. So you probably don't listen to our show. We have a lot of little abbreviations for
Joe.
For
if he did listen to our show, I don't know if he would be here.
Yeah, so we can assume. But
no,
we
I wanted to go
this.
In blind.
Yeah.
So we have certain abbreviations that we use on the show. One of them is CBBs. That stands for Certified Buffett Bangers. Those are like the classic songs, like you know, Margaritaville, Cheeseburger in Paradise. We yeah. also have like PPRs, which are the Parrothead Private Reserves. Those are like the fan favorites.
Yeah.
Like
Costa Marseille, right?
Like Costa Marseille would be a
Costa
PPR.
A PPR. Yeah.
Migration
yeah.
would be a PPR.
Mm-hmm.
Landfall would be a PPR.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm going to introduce a new abbreviation on this show, which is
uh-oh.
A BBR, which stands oh. for Buffett Blues Rampagers.
Ooh.
Whoa, okay.
Because he can get bluesy at times, especially when he's got Fingers backing him up on the harmonica.
Fingers.
So I'm wondering, Stephen, what is your favorite Buffett blues rampager? What is the bluesiest that Buffett ever ooh. Got?
Well, oh, the bluesiest ever got was, thanks to my dad, it was Dixie Dinah, man.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, Dixie Dinah on the live record, man. You had to be there, that one.
Yeah.
Did he ever do a studio version of Dixie Dinah?
My dad did.
Your dad did a studio version.
Yeah, my dad
ooh,
did.
Okay.
Which album was that on?
Back to the Blues, I think. I think that's the I think I'm on. I think I'm on the art, like the inside art of that CD too. Like as a little baby. Yeah.
So you got like the Nirvana Nevermind baby thing on.
Yeah, except I'm fully clothed.
Oh, that's yeah. That would be embarrassing.
Truly. But I'd say that's the bluesiest you ever got.
Should we play a little bit of that? I mean, we do actually play some music on this podcast time to time. Should we? You want to listen a little bit of Dixie Diner?
Yeah, the live one. Yeah,
yeah. Or I could do the Greg Taylor version too.
Either one, whatever you want to cue up.
I think we get bluesy, right?
Let's
do it. All right, I got to do tech. Let's blues it reverse.
Let's blues it. Blues Rampage. That's the first I've heard that.
You know what song that's from, right?
I don't know why I don't. Why am I blanking?
That's from
Fool Button.
Fool Button, yeah.
Oh yeah.
Let's hear a little bit. This is Greg Fingers Taylor himself on Dixie Diner.
All right, I'm gonna do a little song here about food, Memphis, Tennessee.
That's him.
We're talking about hot sweet potatoes and craggling bread. I need some mulligan stew with Turner Richman's head.
My goodness.
I need some black-eyed peas and some collard greens.
He's doing some nice crowd work here.
You know.
Yeah.
But nothing could be finer than a sitting down eating at the Dixie Diner.
That is what we call some good fingers action.
That's some awesome fingers action.
All right. Hey, how about that?
I mean, that's basically him just leading the band.
You know, when we first started doing this show, like I said, I hadn't heard, like I heard Margaritaville and Cheeseburger in Paradise. That was my knowledge of Jimmy Buffett's music. And on our second episode, like when we were talking about White Sport Coat, which I think was the first album to feature Greg, and the Coral Reefers.
Yeah.
Cameron told me, he's like, okay, I want you to listen for a guy by the name of Fingers on the harmonica because he is essential to the Jimmy Buffett sound. And I thought to myself, how could a harmonica player be essential to the Jimmy Buffett sound? And then as we went along, it truly became apparent that he was doing things on the harmonica that I've never heard done on the harmonica before.
And I don't think he ever will again.
It's
the same thing with my pops. It's like that sound is irreplaceable, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, and when you hear it, you know it, right? You know, that's him, you know, and that's something that, you know, that's what all musicians strive to have, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny. We were just listening to that, too. And another guy I wanted to mention was that one of Greg's biggest influences, you can tell in his singing, his crowd work, his playing. I don't know if you guys ever heard of him, a guy named Junior Wells.
I know Junior Wells. Yeah.
Like Junior Wells is like one of my dad's biggest influences. If you ever want to listen to him for a little bit, him and Buddy Guy have some records out. Pretty great.
In the meantime, since we're talking about, you know, music influences and things, you haven't listened to our show, but if you do, you'll hear that we're pretty well informed on music and know precisely what we're talking about. Joe, okay. I don't know if you can hear me derailing this conversation yet, but we are getting there. So, you know, you I think you mentioned Muddy Waters earlier, B.B. King, obviously. By the way, mm-hmm. your cover of that song at the end of your last album, Funked Vibe, that I think that might have been, maybe not, that might have been my favorite track. It's one of them. I really enjoyed that.
Funked Vibe is original.
Oh, wait, is it?
Yes, it's original.
Oh, I thought I had seen. Oh, well, it's
going
awesome.
Home. Somebody did misquote that. A couple of people have misquoted that as a cover, but Funked Vibe is an original, and Going Home is a cover. The song right before it. Yeah,
I really like that one too. For what it's worth,
thank you. Yeah.
But Joe, we were just beginning to talk about our deep and accurate knowledge of blues and just music generally speaking. And
of course,
so
yes.
I wanted to spit, you know, a few other bands that artists I've enjoyed, T-Bone Walker, John Lee Hooker, and it's, you know, some other blues groups. I don't know if you know about the Young Muckers or, mm-hmm. You know, Joe, help me out here. Sirloin Sam, Beeler, Drumsticks.
No Neck Musgraves.
No Neck Musgraves. Yeah, that's a really bluesy one. Yeah, that's pure Delta. Yeah, I don't know if you've heard any of those guys. We really really enjoyed them.
T-Bone Walker and John Lee Hooker, I definitely have heard of.
there's Blind Deaf Mute Johnson.
Yeah, he's cousins with Flying Lemon Jefferson. I heard. Yeah,
Flying Lemon Jefferson.
Flying Lemon Jefferson is actually real, by the way. So, like, I just so you know.
As are the rest of these.
Yeah, yeah. as is Blind, Deaf, Mute.
We're on
yeah.
the same page.
There's
I'm definitely going to listen.
Acne Scarred
now.
Walker.
Acne Scarred Walker. There you go.
Pockmarked Jim.
That's my uncle.
Oh,
come on.
Your uncle Jim.
Yeah. He had a bigger folk influence anyway, Joe. We're stretching our knowledge now. I think we've surpassed.
Yeah,
our
we're getting.
Here. Well, it's all roots music, right?
That's all
Americana.
Yeah, Americana.
So you, Stephen, you are not only the progeny of one of the greatest harmonica players ever in music, but also your stepfather is also an extremely distinguished harmonica player. So first of all, clearly your mom's got a type. And that's okay.
Right. Yeah.
But like, I know, sorry. But did you ever pick up harmonica at any point?
Mm. Oh man. A lot of people ask me this question and I always have the same answer. No.
No.
but I mean,
it's understandable.
I have tried to play it, and I mean, it is a tough instrument to play, and it's not something that my brain can wrap its head around. I don't think I have the lung capacity of either Greg or Kim. You know, it's like, or whatever they've got it.
That's quite, that's quite wise. Cause if you are associated as you are with such titans of the harmonica, you can only be compared to them. So it's good that you went in the other direction.
It's either you live up to the name or you just say, I'm going to do something else. You know what I mean? And live up to the name in another way, you know?
So. And you are an excellent guitar player. We've both been listening to your albums, and I'm really impressed by the guitar work on them. So it's you are mastering your own instrument, which is really good.
Yeah, thank you. I've been practicing every day for the past, I'd say, almost 2 months, and I've learned in even the past week is like. It's crazy. I know more. I'm like, I got to make another album because I know way more now, you know? So,
yeah. Well, I mean, we can't wait for your next album. You started your career in, it seems like 2019. That's when you released your first album.
Mm-hmm.
And so you started your career probably at the worst time to start a career as a performer. Because the next we were hit with a global pandemic, and all music venues, especially those in California where you live, are closed. So how has the pandemic kind of affected your approach to like composing, recording? What have you been doing during the pandemic?
The pandemic has been, I mean, well, it's crazy because Existential Blues I made in the pandemic.
Because we were facing an existential crisis.
Exactly. Yes. Right. Right. Yeah. So it's like, it's been a lot of practicing, a lot of learning, a lot of listening, a lot of things like that, you know, really just waiting for everything to open up again, you know, but and preparing, I guess, in a sense, because the pandemic really was a bummer because I had a lot of shows planned. And I was like, I was supposed to play in Spain and places like that. And I, you know,
beautiful and, cities like Barcelona, really... Paris, Sacramento.
Hey, Joe, come on now.
Right, exactly. But it's like, it's almost a blessing too, because I kind of realized I wasn't really ready necessarily, you know. I mean, there's no practice better than the stage, but I definitely think the longer I practice and get to sit with my instrument, the better, you know. I mean, it's got to give at some point, but you know.
Yeah. Well, it feels like we're on the tail end of it now.
Yeah,
you know, things are
actually
opening back up.
I just
up.
Got vaccine the vaccine today, the first dose.
Hey, nice.
So yeah.
So Steve and I really look forward to your next album. I'm sure that there are plenty of pandemic themed blues tracks on there. Social distancing blues.
Hey man, don't steal my title, man.
What else? My mask stinks. My head hurts, and I don't love Jesus.
Stupid.
So good. Yeah, that's the title of my next single.
My mask stinks.
Yeah. And the other part too, right? No,
and I don't love Jesus.
Oh my God, that you get canceled right there.
We might lose our sponsor.
You have a sponsor?
The Catholic Church.
The Catholic, yes. The papacy has come out in support of us as the official Jimmy Buffett podcast of the Vatican. Yeah.
Oh, it's a big deal.
Yeah. We're on the road to beatification.
Steven, you are in LA, is that right? You're somewhere in Southern California.
Orange County. Yeah.
Orange County. Yes.
Yeah. So not LA County, but pretty close.
So you have a girlfriend and she plays bass. Is that right?
Yeah, she does. Yeah.
And it seems to me from some of our interactions that she may be the technical whiz behind Steven Taylor's sound. Does she also help you with the production aspect of the music?
She did on the latest single. Without her, I wouldn't have had that song out. All I did was play guitar.
So she does all of like the and mixing and the producing and stuff, right?
Yeah, she mixed it and played bass and I had Nathan James master it, but yeah, she did all the mixing and recording and tracking and all that kind of stuff.
So she's a keeper then, right?
Yeah, she's the brains behind it, right? Yeah.
No, without her, we may not have your music.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we would, I mean, I had, yeah, maybe.
The single does sound right fantastic, now, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I love the kind of full sound of it. And especially because I was listening to it chronologically on Spotify. And when I got to that very last
really?
One, I was like, ooh, yeah, it kind of wrapped it all up. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like a new, different sound. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'd ever do a full album of that sound, you know, necessarily, but.
Sure.
Just because I love the old school stuff, but you know, maybe one day, you know.
Yeah.
So how did you record it? Do you have like a studio, like a local studio that you go to? Or I mean, like nowadays with like home mixing, you can record that stuff at home remotely. How were you able to record it?
So all four of my projects, like the two albums and the two singles, are all recorded. We're all recorded at different places, pretty much. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this last one was through Ableton on my girlfriend's computer.
Mm-hmm.
We just did it all through the computer, like no amps, nothing, no Jesus. Like mic rigs or anything like that. Yeah, that was just the computer. And then actually, I don't know if you heard my other single, "Level of Fear," but I did that all on this phone right here that I'm using.
Wow.
And just that one, like... you know, not as good of a mix, but because I did everything. But yeah.
Just like Muddy Waters used to do it.
Yeah, not really. I'll never be Muddy Waters, but yeah.
So what do you think of like nowadays in music, especially like in rock music and blues music, there seems to be this movement toward analog, like recording straight to vinyl, going into the old studios. Like, what do you think of that as opposed to like what you're doing, which is doing the mixing on your computer? Are you just doing it because like necessity dictates it, or like if you had the choice, would you go to analog? Is there a difference in your opinion?
Oh, there's a huge difference. I heavily prefer analog over digital most of the time. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think digital recording is great for a lot of things, but I definitely would prefer an analog sound. I think a lot of blues musicians do.
Is it like more expensive to do it that way? I mean, it's got to be, right?
You got to get the studio. Yeah, you got to get the guy to set it up. But luckily, I'm fortunate to know some guys that can help me out with that. You know, actually, speaking of which, this guy, Big John Atkinson, he has like all the old record to vinyl gear. I don't know. I can't find words right now, but
he wants me to do. Yeah,
there you go. And, wants me to record a couple songs with him, and he just sets up in a house, takes him like an hour, and we do a few songs or whatever, just straight up, you know, how they used to do it. You get the most real, raw, genuine sound that way. And I think that honesty in music is the most important thing.
Right. And that's one of the things like that that's one of the things we kind of lost with the pandemic, right? Was the ability to be in the same room and record with one another. Have you been able to safely do anything like that? Like being in a room with other musicians or recording maybe over the internet with other musicians?
Yeah. Existential Blues I did in a studio.
With other musicians.
With other musicians. I mean, we had masks on and we did the whole thing, you know.
It was actually all Androids, Joe. It's been a new advancement down in Southern California.
I mean, it's amazing what they can do. Robots. It's amazing what they can do with robots nowadays. It feels like you're in the room with real people.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Depth of feeling with robots that really translates well to the blues, I hear.
Yeah, they're still working on that.
The AI blues revolution.
Right. Oh God! I hope not.
They could replace us all.
No, never.
Yeah.
Nobody's safe.
It could replace everything. Yeah.
That's actually how you know that we've reached the singularity is when AI starts writing the blues.
Oh my God! Then they just keep going from there.
Yeah.
It's over.
Binary blues, man. It's coming. Yeah.
Elon Musk is working on it as we speak.
Right.
Between the Hyperloop and the rocket that keeps exploding.
Yeah, the elevator to the moon.
To the moon.
That's another good album title.
Crazy.
What was it?
Yeah.
Elevator to the moon.
Yeah.
Maybe.
First AI blues album, Elevator to the Moon. Yeah. Go ahead. You can pitch that one too. Any of this, feel free to pitch this around. Yeah. This is all gold, I'm sure.
Geez, we're writing his whole album for him. I hope we get like credits.
I'll name drop.
You could say like the Cameron and Joe think tank.
TM.
Maybe.
Yeah. So Steven, we would be remiss if we got through this entire episode without talking about, we talked a little bit about like your relationship to Jimmy Buffett's music, your relationship to Jimmy Buffett as a person, but like, do you think that you would be a Jimmy Buffett fan if it weren't for the fact that you have this relationship with him, you know, familially? Like, do you actually enjoy Jimmy Buffett's catalog of work just independent of your relationship with him?
So it would be, I wouldn't be Greg's son. Is that
what
you're saying?
If you weren't Greg's son.
Greg'd still be there, right?
Yes. Greg is still there. Huh. It's all exactly the same. If you had no relationship to Jimmy Buffett's music, do you think you would still be a fan of the music? Because it's not often that bluesy. It can get bluesy at times.
Here's how I would look at it. I'd probably look at it as I respect his music. I wouldn't know it as much, I don't think. But I would respect it. And like I said, my knowledge of it would be gone from, like, wouldn't even compare to what it is now. But I'd be like, oh, yeah, Margaritaville. That's a good song.
No, so you would be like me.
Guy,
yeah.
You would be in the same position that I was in. Yeah.
Exactly.
So what you're saying is maybe the Spotify algorithm wouldn't pull a bunch of Jimmy Buffett for you naturally.
It's weird, though. But I mean, it's like, well, would I still be into blues as much, too? Because, like, well, is Kim involved still? Like, what am I, you know?
Kim is still your stepdad in this scenario.
Okay.
You do not know Jimmy Buffett personally, but you're still a blues rampager from cradle to now.
Well, Kim and Greg were good friends, so I would still know Greg in a way.
Oh.
Which
oh,
means man, I would still reality. Know the Buffett thing, yeah.
But you don't, you know Greg through Kim.
But not, yeah.
But
yeah.
You don't know Jimmy. So you don't, you're not directly connected to Jimmy, so you don't feel beholden to him to be a fan of his music. Would you still be a fan of his music?
This is becoming a more loaded question by the second.
My answer is, I don't know.
Good answer.
I just like, I like how
that is that is an amazing question.
How deeply you took us into the hypothetical universe of this question.
All right, let's do another one where the blues doesn't exist in the world.
Oh my God. Yeah. Well, that's a deep question, too, in and of itself.
We don't have to explore it if you don't want to. I'm good.
Well, I think we know the answer to the question. What was it?
Yeah, it's a touchy subject if you want to. It's a pretty deep one. If you want
you would,
to
you would still
that.
Be listening to Fall Out Boy today.
Oh, God. Yeah, that's a sad reality. Well, maybe not, though, because it's deep, man. If you really want to get into
that's
that
true.
Right now, if there were no blues. Well, blues is born from... you know, the struggle of African Americans, obviously. Blues also is the stepping stone for jazz and the stepping stone for rock and roll, punk, funk, soul, R&B, rap. The list goes on. Pop music, as you know it today, nothing would be the same. So yeah, if you didn't have blues, we might be still listening to classical.
We might be listening to waltz.
We might be.
He might be so living then, and dying in three quarters time.
Exactly. The only Jimmy Buffett music that would exist would be living and dying in three quarter time.
Yeah, Jimmy Buffett would be playing an accordion and doing that maybe.
Frankly, I don't mind.
You don't mind.
I wouldn't mind.
We wouldn't. We'd be like, this is amazing.
Yeah. I bet if Jimmy Buffett set his mind to it, he'd be an amazing accordion player.
I'm sure. You know, if you said, if you went up to Jimmy Buffett, he's the kind of guy, if you went up to him and were like, you can't play accordion, he'd be like, oh, I can. You know what I mean? even still now, he'd be like, yeah, I can. And he'd learn it. Yeah. And he doesn't, I mean, he, you know, he's just up there and strumming a few chords, you know, and he's cool with it, you know?
So Jimmy Buffett did teach us that you can get a long way without a whole lot of natural musical talent. Would you agree
careful
with that
Joe.
Would you agree with that?
I don't know about that. I think that Jimmy Buffett is talented musically in the sense of, especially his writing.
Absolutely. But what writer. I'm referring to is like musicianship and singing.
Okay, well, his musician, I mean, he's not a great guitar player. Obviously. But that's not a knock on him or anything, you know what I mean?
No, it's a compliment.
I don't think he's... I like his voice, too, man. I mean, his voice... I mean, to go back to Costa Marseille again, listen to Jimmy's voice on that, man. I mean, that is some great singing. I think that, especially in his prime, he could sing.
Yeah.
I mean, he can't belt, but I mean, you know what I mean? He's got a good voice.
He can try. I enjoy hearing him trying to belt.
He can try.
He,
I mean,
he belts in his own way.
Yeah.
He's kind of like... he's like the trop rock version of Bob Dylan, because Bob Dylan also not a great singer, not a great guitar player.
Joe, that's unfair. That's
terrible,
unfair to Jimmy.
Terrible harmonica player, but a great songwriter.
I definitely prefer Jimmy Buffett over Bob Dylan.
I gotta say, I'm fully on this one here too.
I'm in lone territory.
You've become the villain of the pod. Yeah, we're all standing with our arms crossed. Yeah, we're tired of it. This is slanderous, Joe.
Well, to be fair,
I began our podcast this way too, and now we're here on this interview slandering the man to whom we owe the pod.
If I may defend myself, Cameron.
Yeah. You may.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you for being a little more merciful than Cameron. Bob Dylan for me was what Jimmy Buffett is to you.
Okay.
Because my dad was a huge Bob Dylan fan, as your dad was a huge Jimmy Buffett fan. And he introduced me to Bob Dylan in order to get me to stop playing Green Day.
Really? So, okay.
Yeah. So maybe that's why I made that connection. So let's wrap it up with one last question, and then we will get to plugs. So, Stephen, How do you think that the blues, because the blues, as you said, is a foundational to American music. There would be no American music without the blues. So right. How do you think going forward in this age of computer and AI and we're making all this stuff on our computers, how can the blues, reestablish the blues as a popular American music genre? Because you're kind of the pioneer here in that regard.
As a popular, I don't know. I don't know if it'll ever reach the popularity it had, in the 50s, right? Or 60s. I think that's okay. I think a better goal is to at least have more people understand the history of it. And I mean, if anybody hears some good blues music, they're going to like it. You know, it's just a matter of getting them to hear it. But yeah, I don't think it's ever going to be like topping Justin Bieber, as sad as that is. But
well, I think Justin Bieber at this point, maybe.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe if there's a La La Land style, a blues-centric film.
Maybe. That would help. Maybe. That would help.
Maybe if Billie Eilish did a blues album.
That would be pretty cool. I would be like, that's pretty dope. But
so then your role is more, you're a blues communicator rather than you're not trying to reestablish blues as a popular American music genre. You're bringing the history of the blues to the present.
Yeah, I think that's more important. I'm not in it for popularity. I'm in it because I like playing it, because I like telling people about it, And
in other words, you're not making music for money.
Yes,
you're making
correct.
Music for you.
Yeah, well, for me and for others, right?
Yes.
And it's it's important. Like it's important that people understand where it came from,
Well, Stephen, we're going to wrap things up now. Do you have anything that you would like to plug?
Well, I've got two albums out. Just search my name up on Spotify or iTunes. And then I've got CDs available on my website, stephentaylorblues.org. Vinyl soon, too, by the way. I don't know if we talked about that, but I'll have vinyls within the next month and a half to 3 months, somewhere in there.
Nice.
Be on the lookout for that, too. I'll have them on my website.
I might get myself some vinyl because I have a modest vinyl collection at home. Of course, I'm not at home right now, but I can easily have it forwarded to my mother and tell her to put it.
Yeah, there you go.
Put it on the
coolest
shelf.
Way to collect vinyl.
Yeah. Send it to my mother.
Send it to your mom.
Yeah. I'll listen to it when I get home. Once I get that Chinese vaccine.
I think vinyl is the best way to listen to music. So
I think so too. I've always enjoyed listening to vinyl. Unfortunately, because it's become such a collector's market now, you can't really go down to the used record store and get like a $2 vinyl anymore. Thank you for plugging that. We also have some pluggables. You can visit our social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. That is at Pod in Paradise, at PODINPARADISE. And our playlist on Spotify, Jimmy Buffett's Most Dated Songs. We have two new songs from our forthcoming Coconut Telegraph episode. And Cameron, you want to tell us about Paul is a Flat Circle?
Yeah, I'll actually put that together at some point and send it, as I've been plugging for the last month now. Paul is a Flat Circle, public Spotify's playlist. If you ever wanted to listen to Paul McCartney 1, 2, and 3 resequenced into 1 2.5-hour album, you can do that if you're me and have the track list written out on a piece of paper. I will put it into the computer at some point. And Joe, you'll be able to listen to it too.
I can't wait. I'm waiting with anticipation for this album.
So if you just want to just have a greater appreciation for a septuagenarian doing rock, then maybe in the next 2 weeks, by the time this episode comes out, it'll be there.
Stephen, are you a Paul McCartney fan? Because he did some blues rampaging himself.
I have a lot of respect for Paul McCartney. Yeah.
Diplomatic.
I like him. Well, diplomatic. I'm not like a diehard. My favorite Beatles is George Harrison.
Yes.
I'll say that.
This is the correct answer. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm with you 100%
since
I'm
a
on
guitar
that
player too. But yeah, I know I'd say Paul's the closest second. Yeah, I do like Paul. I got nothing against him. you know. I don't know. I don't listen to Wings, if that's what you're asking me. You know, I'm not like, I don't know all the names. I don't know all the albums, you know.
Steven, you just keep digging the hole deeper with Cameron.
Sir Paul McCartney, I'm there. I'll go see him.
Sir Paul, if you'd like to be on the pod, we'd love to have you anytime.
And bring me back if you have Paul too. I want to just be. I won't even say anything. I'll just sit here.
Well, Steven, thank you so much for doing our silly, dumb little show.
Come on.
Well, it is yourself short. We really were honored to have you. We would love to have you again next time when your Pandemic Blues album comes out. Please come back on the show. We'd love to have you.
Come back. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Please have me back. Yeah.
And as always, you can join us next time for some congas. Thank you, Joe. Congas. Some vibes.
And other little goodies. Bye-bye.
Bye, Joe. And Steven.